This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It's happening, everybody. You're in the right place. It is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Big stuff coming your way today. We got Lindsay Theory joining us at the top of the hour at 3 o'clock. We'll talk about what's going on with the NFC West rival Rams. John Clayton at 4 o'clock. And then Daniel Kramer, who covers the Seattle Mariners, will join us at 5 o'clock. Get into some baseball conversation with him. Our producer, Mike Lefko, is on vacation today. Picked a lovely day to go hang outside. A friend from out of town, show him the beauty of Seattle. It's just dumping rain. We got our buddy DJ Wilder behind the glass today. So we're in good hands, Dave.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, whoever his friend is that's coming into town, they're going to get an authentic view of Seattle.
He said he was telling his friend, like, you know, that's the whole rain thing's a bit overhyped. It's not that bad. And then literally the day he comes in, or this weekend, It's been horrific, except for one day. Saturday was really nice, and then yesterday, today, not so much.
Man, and the other thing, too, is I don't know if you've felt this way. It's just muggy, man. You just feel like I could never live in a place like Florida or the Southeast where it was just humid all the time.
Humidity stinks, Dave.
I would sweat to death.
Oh, it's brutal. When I lived in St. Louis and Chicago, it gets incredibly humid to the point where I was doing a morning show in St. Louis, got up at 7 a.m. and stepped out the door and immediately started sweating, and I was ticked. I was like within 5 minutes going, this sucks. What is going on here? This weather stinks, and everybody's shiny, and your skin is sticking. You bend your arm, it sticks. The back of your legs are sticking together. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
Well, you know, and also I know that I have a buddy that said that he would get up every morning and take a cold shower.
Yeah, which is fine until you get outside.
I'm like, well, first of all, cold showers are for degenerates, number one. And then, you know, why would you do that? Does it really work? He swears that it works. But
it works if you don't have air conditioning in your place. If you got air conditioning, you're fine. It all falls apart when you step out the front door. So,
So happy to have DJ on board.
Yeah, DJ's
today.
Here, and Lefko's out suffering in the rain and the humidity with his friend.
No pickleball for him today.
Well, maybe they toughed it out. Who knows what they did. But meanwhile, interesting weekend for the Mariners. And by interesting, I mean not very good. Mm. It was really, really frustrating. Really frustrating to watch this team and watch them find different ways of losing. I don't expect a lot of wins. We've talked about it over and over, our predictions. I predicted an under 500 season. So the fact that they lose isn't problematic. It's the manner in which they choose to lose. The manner in which they find ways to lose. And the manner in which they put the proper person on the mound to help them lose, Montero.
I thought of you instantly because, you know, it was Fernando Rodney. I mean,
He's Rodney 2.0.
He is. I mean, what was it? Six pitches. He had two outs on six pitches.
Yep.
And so I was kind of up to that point. And then I went and jumped in the car because I paused it. And I heard Shannon doing the post game and just, oh, my gosh, you got to be kidding me. And you know who I thought of instantly? Montero.
Yeah.
It's like Newman.
Yep. He was the guy. I mean, he wasn't alone. But he, you know, Graveman came in, gave up his first run of the year. So you're going, okay, he's coming back. You cut him some slack, but came at an inopportune time, especially on the heels of a game. We're talking about the game on Saturday, by the way. That Yusei Kikuchi got off to what looked like was going to be a brutal start. Mm-hmm. Just wasn't happening for him. He's walking guys, throwing a lot of pitches, didn't have command. They came out and they had service, and the trainer came out to talk to him. I'm like, oh, man, don't, please. Yeah. No. not another injury. You know, apparently he was fine. And then he guts out what turns into a tremendous performance. Yeah. Seven innings, three hits, no runs, three walks, six strikeouts, 94 pitches. He shut them down for seven innings on a day where it looked like he just couldn't find his command and gutted it out and gave you a stellar start. Graveman gives up his first run. You're like, all right, I can live with that. Then here comes Montero, who gives up three in one inning on two hits, two walks. And I said this in the email that I sent to you that, you know, listen, I know people love to rip on service and fire him. He doesn't know what he's doing. And I still ask the question, what was it you thought he would be able to do that he hasn't done with what he has to work with? a lot of inexperience, a lot of guys who aren't producing, 51 different players going through this clubhouse so far, and they've played 66 games. I don't know what he's supposed to have done. Who would have done better? Would they be a winning team if Tony La Russa was the manager, or Dave Roberts was the manager, or Joe Girardi? Would they be a winning team? No. They are lacking talent. They are lacking experience. But having said that, this was the first game this year where I honestly said, what in the bleep are you doing, man? What in the bleep are you doing? He walks two in a row. He clearly, and this has been his history. This isn't one where you go, well, we're going to stick with him. This is, you know, he's going to find his way out of it. No, he has shown you who he is when the wheels come off. He's Kikuchi from last year. We talked about Kikuchi could give you 3-4 just rock solid innings, and then for whatever reason, mechanics go haywire or something happens and he can't bring it back. That's who Montero is. He goes haywire, you can't bring it back. And then you fast forward to what he's doing out there, and you know, he gets the first two outs, and you're like, okay, that's seems to be par for the course.
In the most efficient way possible.
Yeah, it's just what he does. He grounds, he gets two ground outs, then he walks Zimmer, then he walks Naylor, and then boom, Bradley comes up and singles, and at that point it's 4-2, and I'm thinking, okay, this is where you pull him. It's just not there. This is where you pull him. They didn't pull him. They leave him in. Rivera hits the double, and they tie the game up. And then we saw how it ended on that Fakakta throw from Seawald to home when ball was hit back to him. I mean, it was just a brutal way to lose. There's losing, and then there's just falling on your face, and that's what they did in that game.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. I mean, I was as surprised that they didn't pull Montero as I was that Yusei Kikuchi was able to keep going, because you saw what McKenzie did first. That's our buddy with the skinny long legs,
14 pounds. Yeah,
yeah, and oh my gosh, you look at his arms. I mean, he is a very interesting looking athlete, and he just obviously just turns his body into a whip. But you know, he couldn't locate at all, and so they pulled him after 2/3. Then you know, Kikuchi gets out there, and you know, was he like waving his arm or kind of trying to stretch?
Yeah, like
or
he
something.
Was having trouble with the mound with his land. You know, when his where he was landing was problematic, and I don't know.
Didn't you think that they were going to pull him there, though? I thought for sure, okay, he's
well, when they brought
too.
The trainer out, yeah, I thought, okay, is the knee acting up on him, or what's going on there?
Yeah, but it's just such a shame. You mentioned, you know, the performance he had, and just giving up the 3 hits, no earned runs, 6 strikeouts, and, you know, and then it ends that way. So it's just terrible. I mean, I'll say this in defense of Service, that a lot of times you leave a guy like that in there, he finishes the game, and nobody says anything about it. Nobody says, oh, that was a great call. You know, it's like going for it on fourth down. You know, if you pick up the fourth down, nobody talks about it. But if, you know, if you come up short and then you don't run the kind of play that everybody thinks, there's all the second guessing, then, you know, it becomes a big problem. But, yeah, I don't – going forward, though – I mean, I feel like he needs to have a much shorter leash on Rafael Montero.
He's got 7 saves on the season. He's got 6 blown saves.
Yeah.
You've seen who he is. There isn't the, well, historically he's not this guy, I'm going to trust him. I understand that with somebody who hasn't burned you, with somebody who hasn't consistently shown you that when they get in trouble, they have a hard time reeling it back in. I get that. You're going to stick with Graveman. It would be a great example. If he's scuffling a bit out there, you're going to, all right, this guy hasn't given up a run all year. I'm going to ride with him. And if he gives it up, okay. You know, I trusted a guy who's been rock solid all season. You can't make that case for Montero. He knows exactly who he is and how he responds when he gets in trouble, and he doesn't respond well. He's one of those guys, high leverage situations for him. I know sometimes you have to work with what you have available in the bullpen, and sometimes guys just aren't available because they pitched the night before or maybe a couple of games consecutively. I understand you've got to work, but you always have more than just one option unless you're getting deep into extra innings and you're throwing position players out there. But outside of that, Montero's just not a high leverage guy. I don't want to see him in those situations. And in that case, when you saw him lose his command and walk 2 in a row and then give up that single, at that point, what else are you, I understand you're still an out away, but you see that he's got nothing. He's got nothing. And you stuck with him. That was the first time all season where I really, really took issue with a move that he didn't make. Anywhere else, I can think of, you know, yeah, Montero's certainly, as I just said, he's been problematic through the season. But I don't recall Scott leaving him in a situation where it was clear that the tires had gone flat. He just didn't have it yet. He just said, well, I don't care. I'm leaving him in.
Yeah. I wonder, out of 30 managers, how many, other than Scott, the other 29 would have not pulled a guy in that situation. Made a pitching change. So, yeah, I guess, you know, is that the first time all year that you've thought, okay, Scott Service, not a great – I mean, I don't think it's the managing.
No, that's the first time I've literally yelled at the TV, what the bleep are you doing, man? What are you doing? What else do you need to see? There have been – certainly they've provided a lot of frustration as a team throughout the season in moments. The San Diego series we could talk about. There are different moments we could talk about. And I understand there are a lot of people that think Service isn't a good manager. Get rid of him. Get rid of DePoto. Get rid of everybody. I understand. I haven't been in that camp. I don't have a huge problem with Service. I think he's a good manager. Do I think he's great? I don't really know because I don't know who's going to make this team look great with the way it's constructed.
He's got too many players that are question marks.
Yeah.
To judge him based on that. I have to say though, I was more frustrated by Friday's game, I think, than that. Aaron Civale, who, you know, was pitching that night, he gave up one hit. So, and they were basically 2-for-29, the Mariners. Civale had been given up over the last 8-9 games. I was looking at, like, is this guy throwing smoke? He's given up like 7, 8, 9 hits a game.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mariners get 2. I was happy it was J.P. Crawford and Mitch Haniger, too. And then that brings us to the other unbelievably disappointing. The injury to Haniger, I just, what does this guy have to do to get?
He's got to go to a voodoo priestess or something and get the spell taken, get the curse taken off, because we talked about it before the show. It would be different if Haniger were one of those guys that always had a pulled hamstring or, oh, back tightness, he's out, or, you know, one of those soft tissue things that are chronic with some guys. And you're just like, this guy's soft or he's injury prone. All of his injuries are damage. I mean, he's taken a ball to the goodies that leads to other injuries. He's taken a ball to the face. That one fired right off the bat into the knee. I mean, these aren't like, oh, he's just soft. You know, throw some dirt on it, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
He's got the worst luck. The worst luck. And I don't look at him as injury prone because of the nature of his injuries.
Right. That's what makes it frustrating. I mean, and you're right. There are those guys. I remember the one was back spasms.
Yeah, which happens, certainly. I mean, listen, if he had back spasms, yeah, it happens. But if it's chronic, if it's somebody who's just constantly got a sore calf, and, oh, I got a sore shoulder, and I got a sore this, that, or the other, missing another game, he's not that guy.
Yeah. Well, remember Franklin Gutierrez. Now, Goody had something that, was
ankylosing spondylitis.
Spondylitis. Nice there, Dr. Stelton. Very well done. But, yeah, I mean, that was different. But, I have to say that the guys that are, have the chronic hamstring pull or, the back tightness. I always kind of think, just in the back of my mind, well, maybe they need to work harder, or we were talking about some guys have too much muscle.
Yeah, the guys that are track athletes you see are constantly pulling hamstrings, and then they've got zero body fat, like DK Metcalf. We were talking about his race. I'm going, oh, man, he's got that body type that looks like I'm just picturing him reaching around and grabbing the hamstring halfway through.
Right.
Because he's so tight. He just looks so tightly
not enough body fat.
Yeah, and the muscles are just maybe they're just harder to stretch. I don't know. But, yeah, so Haniger isn't that guy. He's certainly not out of shape by any stretch, but he's not like that.
Well, we used to in football call those guys track guys. My hamstring's like 80%. Like, my whole body's 80%. Let's go, man.
Sounds good right now.
Yeah. So Haniger is the opposite of that. He is, one of these guys that, and, we saw him all year diving, how many sliding catches has he made out there? I mean, all of that doesn't get him, but 3 different times at the plate. Like you said, when he took one in the stones, he gets one in the face, and now this happens, and that thing ricocheted off his bat and just dropped him. So hopefully we'll see where this ends up, how long it's going to, end up affecting him, but. Man, that was maybe the most frustrating part. Now, we should get to the good stuff, though. Logan Gilbert, I'll tell you what, he has
fantastic.
Been amazing, and it's just been incrementally better every outing. And, I was thinking about it over the weekend, because we remember when him and Kelenic came up at the same time.
And Seawald.
Yeah, that's right, Paul Seawald, the old the spring chicken, he called himself at age 30, but... Yeah, I thought it was – I think we both kind of agreed that it was probably more – I mean, hitters get sent down all the time. But, for your pitcher, for him to get in that kind of a predicament, that would be, I think, worse for the team. So this has worked out really well for them, and the development of Logan Gilbert, it's been fantastic.
Yeah, that was really fun to watch him out there doing his thing. And you just see his ERA slowly trickling down. It's at 4.13, which you look at and go, that's okay. But considering where it was, and he's taking steps every game. He's getting better. And this was by far, this was the biggest jump he had made. You know, the previous start against the Angels, he went 5 innings, really good start, 2 hits, 1 run, but he walked 4. So you're looking at it going, okay, he threw 105 pitches in 5 innings.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great that he only allowed 1, but you can't throw that many pitches in 5 innings. So that's your takeaway from that is, hey, really good, limited the damage, way too inefficient, got to work on that. Then you get to the next start, 6 2/3, 1 run, 1 walk instead of the 4 previous, and he did it on 92 pitches.
Yeah.
So he gave you almost 2 more innings with fewer pitches and 3 fewer walks. So to me, this represented the biggest step he's taken all season, and it was certainly encouraging. And I would think, even as I was saying in our notes last night, even for the cynical Mariner fan who's like, nothing ever works out, look at Kelnick, he's a bust, everybody stinks, even you have to look at that and go, okay, I'll take that one. I feel good about that. I feel good about the way he's trending.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, he did throw, as you mentioned, 105 pitches in 5 innings, but was it his last strikeout that he got, Shohei Ohtani? Whatever that at-bat was, whenever that was, I was like, wow. And he was stressed out after that, and that was he threw a really nasty pitch to get him swinging. So, yeah, there's been something that's happened, you know, almost in every game. You know, the first couple were a little bit rough. I think it was Detroit the first time around where it looked like he just totally lost his command. Or maybe it was the next one against
Oakland. Well,
Detroit,
he only went 2 2/3.
Yeah, I think it was Oakland.
He gave up 3 runs.
Yeah, where he started off with, you know, he had bad control things, and he kind of pulled out of it, mm-hmm. you know. And so, you know, you've kind of seen almost, you know, facing Shohei Ohtani, I think 2 were on. At that point, I mean, he's passing a lot of different tests. It's been really, really good for that development. And again, I'll take his development over, you know, Jared Kelnick, who over the last 5 games is batting 188 down in AAA.
Not doing what you hoped he would do out of the gates. I think Taylor Trammell set the bar high for what you do when you
That's
leave.
True.
You get sent down from the big leagues. He jumped right on the bus or the plane or whatever got him there, got right in the game, and immediately started mashing.
Yeah.
And that hasn't been the case so far.
Well, he's got 17 plate appearances, and he's got a home run and 4 RBIs in there, but struck out 5 times. So, yeah, just continue to monitor him. And you're right, it's not fair, you know, comparing him to Taylor Trammell. I mean, yeah. Trammell just instantly went to work.
Which sounds weird, doesn't it? Because Kelnick's the prize. He's the gem. Him and Julio Rodriguez. They're the gems of your prospects, the highest rated, and saying, it's not fair to compare him to Trammell.
Yeah.
Feels kind of weird. Let's take 2.
All right. Well, as you guys mentioned earlier, Mitch Haniger had to leave the game yesterday during his first at-bat after fouling a ball right off his knee. I guess better his knee than, you know. But x-rays,
other places. Nether regions.
But x-rays have come back negative, and the injury as of right now is a deep bone bruise.
I guess that's good news. I mean, bone bruises can last a really long time. So hopefully it's not, if it's just pain management, then hopefully he's able to work around it. But just to reiterate what we said, incredibly bad luck with this guy. I don't know what else you say about it. It's not anything he's doing wrong. It's not that he's, you know, not training. He's not doing this. He's not taking care of his body. I mean, look at his injuries. It's just insane what has knocked him out of the lineup.
Yeah. And, you know, all the different padding and everything that you can put on your body, you can't put it everywhere. Yeah. I mean, that was just so frustrating. But, you know, I can relate because I didn't have the hamstring pulls and stuff like that. I always carried plenty of body fat, Bob. That way, you know, I wasn't just pulling.
For that very reason. Otherwise, you would have been shredded at 3% body fat.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Everything wasn't, you know, as tight as a guitar string. But, you know, I had bad luck. A lot of times it was just bad luck. Maybe it's just the way I played, but it was always somebody, you know, smashed into my knee or something like that. And so I feel for him. But, you know, I just hope this one is temporary. Never had a bone bruise, by the way.
I had one in my heel that lasted forever.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I remember my mom used to call that a stone bruise.
I've
yeah, on the bottom of your feet. Yeah, where you, Yeah, it can be painful, but it's just you got to get through it. I'm just hoping that for Mitch, all the work that he's put in and what he means to this team. We've talked about whether we think that he should be a trade piece or not. I don't think so. I just wish him the best.
Well, in the latest effort of the Packers trying to end the Aaron Rodgers drama, CEO Mark Murphy had an interesting thing to say about the star quarterback.
Ted Thompson, who most of you know, just a great general manager, passed away this past year.
Or excuse me, earlier this year. Often talked about Aaron that he's a and it wasn't just Aaron, a lot of different players, he would say, he's a complicated fella. So I'll just say that.
Translation, he's a pain in the ass. That's what he's trying to say. He's a pain in the butt. That's what I took away from that. He's a complicated fella.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he was trying to be nice, and it doesn't necessarily mean he's a bad guy, but he's probably is a big pain in the rear end.
With Russ coming back and him saying, hey, everything's good, you know, all this, does it make you even appreciate him more? Russ could be a complicated fella.
He's not. I'm sure he is on some levels. I mean, anybody playing at that level, at that high of a level, has a certain amount of ego attached and expectation. So maybe behind closed doors, they're more complicated than we're aware of. I don't know. I appreciate Russ. I don't have any problems with him.
Well, text it in 710-710. Is Russ a complicated fella, do you think? Again, I'll blame the agent.
He's complicated.
He's complicated.
Because he finds football complicated as compared to baseball, if you ask John Clayton.
Clayton is, he's not a fan.
All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknife prostate. Patriots cornerback Stephon Gilmore is skipping mandatory minicamp. So, should the Seahawks try to make a move for him? A lot of people talking about him in relation to the Seahawks. We'll get into it next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at the top of the hour, Lindsay Theory, who covers the Los Angeles Rams, will join us, talk some Rams football, get some insight on the NFC West division rivals. You guys can text in throughout the show, 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line. You were asking people to text in, Dave, if they thought that Russ was complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Some were saying, 253 says, Russ didn't go to my high school, so yeah, he's a giant pain in my backside.
What's he referring to?
I don't know. Who brings up their high school a lot?
I do.
Yeah?
By the way, I'm going to a 40-year reunion for the state championship game.
Oh, man, you're going to be insufferable when you get back.
Yeah, that's right. I was going through and looking at the roster, you know, our team picture.
Yeah.
We gave up 6 points a game that year and like 172 yards.
I think you guys should recreate the team picture as you are today. Just everybody there. Want to see what everybody looks like.
Well, I saw a bunch of the guys and I said, apparently Wooster football leads to chronic hair loss and weight gain.
They're all competitive eaters now.
Yeah. Referring to John Clayton, likes to talk about people that went to his high school.
Even if it's decades later in a different building, that's fine. Let's see, 206, Russ is not complicated, Mark Rogers is.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. Mark Rogers would wear that.
Yeah, that's his job, be the bad guy.
That's what he does.
Another 206, Russ wants to do 1,000 things at once and be legendary at all of them. He's simply complicated.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't come out that way, and we talked about that in our one-hour show on Friday. Russ is pretty close to perfect. I mean, especially if you compare him to the complicated fella in Green Bay, especially. So, I mean, look, there's been lots of criticism of Russ, too. I remember early on, everybody was like, oh, he's like a robot.
Yeah.
He says the same thing all the time. It's always scripted. He never goes off script. Well, that works.
Yeah,
what
happens when you do go off script.
Yeah, we did see that.
Turns out poorly. It's poorly received.
But it was just talk. I mean, you know, there was never any. I don't think anybody ever really truly thought he was going to get traded.
Well, there was never an ultimatum. There was never fix this or I'm out. I want out. I don't believe in the front. You know, all the stuff that's going on in Green Bay, where it just seems very black and white. You're not parsing anything, as much as he came on the final Kenny Mayne Sports Center and did his interview where he said a lot of things and didn't say anything.
Yeah. Right.
I think every report attached to him is very definitive. Not speculation is he may not want to be here. We're not sure. No, he's telling people he's not going to be there. He doesn't want to be there. Whereas Russ was just, hey, man, I'm getting hit too much. You know, then it became, all right, is he throwing his offensive line under the bus? What does that mean? You know, it led to all of that stuff. But 360, Russ is not complicated. Russ is out front at practice, not in jail, not being a problem. We're lucky. God bless Russ. Wyman, how much you bench? From the 360.
That's really funny. You remember that skit on Saturday Night Live? It was Adam Sandler. Yeah, and you know, they had like they obviously were standing up, but they had like a bench with these little tiny phony legs.
Oh.
So they were, you know, all yoked up, but then they had these little tiny and it was a
skipping leg day, huh?
It was a segment or whatever that they, you know, how much you bench? What was the first part of that?
Oh, about but just basically saying he's the first one out there at practice. He's not.
Yeah.
He's not getting in trouble with the law. He's not a problem. I agree with all of that.
Yeah, I mean, you look around. I won't name names, but I mean, there's some quarterbacks right now that, you know, I mean, you could be Jameis Winston, and he's had some stuff in his past and everything. I think he's past that, but he also throws lots of interceptions. You know, Deshaun Watson. I mean, you know, Russ has just been very little problem here in Seattle, and obviously. Really a good quarterback. And that's the thing. You're blessed. I mean, if you look at, you know, what if you had Sam Darnold? You know, I mean, you're trying to figure that guy out. You're trying to
ask
figure
Brock.
Out.
I heard he's really good.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe all of a sudden it will come out of him, but not seeing it right now. So, yeah, you could have been a lot different situation. I just remember how painful it was those couple years where it was like, you know, T-Jack, can he win a game? You know, was he a 500 guy? You know, Matt Hasselbeck was there. He got hurt.
Matt Flynn.
The Matt Flynn thing. And that was really popular because who was the backup quarterback that Arizona signed back then? And
Kevin Cobb.
Kevin Cobb. Thank you. Because he was with Philly. And I remember, that a lot of talk show hosts were talking about Kevin Cobb.
Yeah, Calabro.
Yeah, Casey.
Casey
definitely wanted. Was pounding the drum for Kevin.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on to other Seahawks news. It's not really news. It's hey, should they look at this guy? Conversation. And that's Stephon Gilmore, who's one of the premier cornerbacks in the league. Is he still going to be that? How much is he going to want? All that. He has not shown up for mandatory minicamp. He's on the books for $7 million as a base salary this year, in the last year of a 5-year deal. And that led everybody to say, hey, well, what about the Seahawks? They potentially have needs. We've identified the cornerback position as the least certain. Doesn't mean they don't have talent. We just haven't really had a chance to see it. We've seen a half a season of Reed. We've seen what Trey Flowers can be, good and bad. And then Akella Witherspoon, you got no idea. You don't know about the rookie you drafted in the fourth round. And then the other guys seem like guys, whether you're talking about Pierre Desir or any of these other guys, they're guys. They're depth.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be competitive. I mean, they've got lots of guys, but there's, like you said, nobody established. So I think everybody's thinking, okay, Stephon Gilmore. And by the way, I think, first of all, he's going into his 10th year, but and he gets lots of interceptions, and especially for a corner who people don't throw at.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the other thing. And he, by the way, is another person that got really, really mad at DK Metcalf. And I don't know if they showed it on TV, but, man, that fight went, like, all underneath the bench practically. So, Stephon Gilmore is really a good one. But, I mean, they got to concentrate on getting Jamal Adams signed here.
That's what makes it seem like probably not likely. I mean, it would make more sense than the Julio Jones deal. In terms of their needs.
What they need, yeah. I agree.
Like, I would love to have Julio Jones, but wide receiver is far from your most pressing need. You could make a better argument that you've got a need for a stud cornerback than you do a stud receiver because you've got two stud receivers. As it sits right now, I don't know that you've got a stud cornerback. There's not one that you can identify. You like Reed, what you saw in the half season outside of that, you got no idea. So he would make more sense in terms of making the argument in terms of the needs of this team, but he's going to be 31 in September. I don't know where he's at in his game. I don't know where he's at with his speed. Is he, you know, he missed 5 games last year. For the most part, has been fairly durable. He's, you know, his games played go 16, 11, 14, 12, 15, 13, 16, 16, 11. Mm-hmm. So he's missed time out there, but he's, as you said, you know, picks off a lot of passes. Very good corner, to say the least. Is he somebody you'd want to invest in in the way that he expects to be paid and still get something done with Jamal and still be able to bring in whatever help you're going to need for injuries or guys that don't pan out. You've got to bring somebody else in.
Well, I suppose that, you know, it's not entirely out of the question just based on what they've done. But first of all, I would much rather have a problem at corner than safety. I think this defense is much better having two Pro Bowl safeties than it is with two Pro Bowl corners. So, and they've been able to develop corners. And a guy that's on their staff now, Deshaun Shedd. When they moved him to corner, I was like, no way, that is not going to work, because, you know, he was a safety, but it worked out. They've been able to develop him. So, and I think Stephon Gilmore would be, you'd feel really good. And I always say, like, that's one of the, you like to have one corner, just one, that you don't have to worry about.
Yeah. Quickly before the break, Brock Huard tends to agree with that, and he would make it his top priority for the Seahawks.
I think he would be my top priority. Defensive lineman, okay, around cut time or even as you get into training camp, there's still some names out there, right? Geno Atkins' name is still out there. I think he's just so physically beat up that the whole entire market has said thanks, but no thanks. Or, you know, he wants a price tag that is totally unreasonable right now for as much production as he's had in the past. There's other defensive line names that are intriguing because of past production, but as far as future production, would I love a bona fide lockdown, one-on-one, take you out of the game kind of corner who I think can still play at a very high level? Yes.
So there's Brock's opinion on it. We'll talk more about that. We'll talk more football coming up at the top of the hour with Lindsay Theory. The professor will join us, but coming up with Logan Gilbert getting better and each star looking that much better. What does the future of the Mariners rotation look like? We'll talk about some of the other names we haven't touched on yet. That's coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Lindsay Theory from ESPN.com will join us at the top of the hour, get a little preview of what's going on with the Los Angeles Rams, see if she can tell us about anything that's falling apart out there, something going wrong, something bad happening with that team. McVay's had it with Stafford. It's untenable. He's going to be traded. Now it's going to be all roses. It's going to be all, he's great, he's not Goff, we've got such a better chance. It's going to be all that.
If you're Matthew Stafford, man, you got to be pretty excited. I actually am like, good for him. I hope he doesn't have a good year, that's for sure. But yeah, I mean, he's kind of struggled there in Detroit. I mean, he's a good quarterback, but he's not great.
Yep.
So maybe he can be great. We hope not.
Yeah, I hope he falls on his face with all. Yes, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but just
maybe he'll get hit by a bus.
Well, I don't want him to be injured or.
I'm not saying it would
stop breathing. Wouldn't kill him. It would just take him out for the season.
Just for the season.
Yeah. So we talked about Logan Gilbert and what we've seen with him. Young guy, you don't put a lot of expectation on him. You're just sort of every positive moment you latch on to and hope that he can build on that. And that's what he's been doing. You know, each start is getting better and better, and this last one being really, really good. We didn't have to qualify it. We didn't have to say, well, for a young guy, that's pretty solid. Like the start before that, I felt like, yeah, he gave up one run, but he walked four, threw 105 pitches in five. And you sort of qualified it with, okay, he's got to work on these things. This one just looked like an awesome start from whether he's a rookie or a veteran. You were walking away going, fantastic day from your starter.
Just, continually getting better. And in, you know, the five innings that we talked about earlier, 105 pitches, the only thing I'll ever remember about that outing is him getting Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, who's been red hot this year and continues to do that. So that's huge for him. So in his last three starts, Gilbert's recorded 17 and two-thirds innings pitch with an ERA just over 2.04. 11 hits, 6 walks, 18 strikeouts, hitters batting 180 against him in that span. Yusei Kikuchi. In his 8 following starts after the 5 earned run performance against Boston on April 23rd, Kikuchi's recorded 50 innings, has a 2.70 ERA, 44 strikeouts to 14 walks, hitters batting 175 against him. He's been doing his part. He's been anything but the Kikuchi of old. When things go bad, he goes bad, stays bad. He's fixed it. He's found a way to reel it back in. Justin Dunn was terrible his last start. Before that had been really good. Still sporting a 3.91 ERA. Walking people is still an issue. Has one start where he only walked one hitter. That was April 22nd against Boston. Has not had a start with no walks. So his command is still an issue. He was another guy who was getting in trouble but limiting damage up until that last start, which was just dreadful. Justice Sheffield is the guy that I worry about because he was really good last year. And it was a shortened season, so we talked about, all right, that's great, but what does he look like through an entire season? We're not even, you know, you still got just under 100 games to play. And he's been really uneven. He's got a 2.16 ERA in the month of September last year. Right now, he's got a 4.91 ERA. He's walked 25 hitters in 58 and two-thirds innings. He's a guy that I think needs to step up, or maybe he can't. Maybe he's just not a guy that's going to be – he's going to be a back-of-the-rotation guy. I don't know. He's shown that he can be very good. But the key is stringing those starts together and being consistently that guy that can be counted upon. You don't have to be an ace. He doesn't have ace kind of stuff. But just to be a consistent member of this rotation, so far he has not. I would say he's a disappointment this year for me, just based on who he was last year and expecting he would take that next step. He's taken a step back.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, here's the good news for Mariner fans, though. You forget that they've got another couple of first-rounders. Now, these guys are a ways off.
Kirby and Hancock.
You get George Kirby and Emerson Hancock. So, I mean, as far as going forward, the future there. But what about Marco Gonzalez, obviously, he's going to be here for, you know, he's here for the long term. But this with the substance, and we talked about what guys do you think are using it, and, you know, if we're going to see any kind of difference. I was thinking about that today going, there's no way it's Marco Gonzalez. I don't think. Just because the way he talked about the whole thing with the Astros with us, you know.
Yeah, I don't. But do they view it the same way? There's been these accepted forms of cheating in baseball for years, whether you're talking about a little rosin and sunscreen on the cap, little Vaseline behind the ear, little pine tar here. It's sort of acknowledged, yeah, guys do it, and sometimes it's over the top, like Michael Pineda when he had it on the back of his neck and he got busted for it. But it's sort of been acknowledged that, yeah, it exists, and we'd sort of tolerate a certain level of stealing signs from second base. There's different areas of cheating, if you will, that are sort of accepted. I wonder if that's how Marco views it. Like, okay, yeah, I can live with guys using little substance here or there. You start banging trash cans, using buzzers and cameras, that's a different – you've crossed a line. So I don't know where he's at on that. So I guess it's a long way of saying he very well could have been partaking in it. We don't know. Maybe it's something all pitchers use. Maybe the rarity was the guy that wasn't using any of it. Like Ryan Roland Smith talked about, he tried it back in the day and – It was worse for him. He couldn't.
Didn't work.
He couldn't get it to do what everybody else could get it to do.
Well, and they're talking about some of the control issues and things like that. And we were talking to El Hombre about that. And he said, well, these guys are throwing so hard, they can't control where the baseball's going. But, you know, maybe that's part of it. But, you know, you kind of look at this rotation right now. And the question is, you know, how do you feel about it? Right. Is it? Maybe compared to, I used to do this a lot more. I do it a lot less, is comparing baseball to football. But you want to compare this starting rotation to an offensive line? I mean, how many times are you like super happy with every guy, you know, every position across the board?
Generally not. Generally, yeah. There's one guy you point to and go, eh.
Yeah.
And you know, if I could upgrade a spot, it'd be that spot.
Yeah. And you mentioned Justice Sheffield just based on, you know, last year, you're right, and an incomplete season. Yeah, he's probably the one that maybe the most disappointing. Justin Dunn's had some rough ones every once in a while, but I don't know. I'm just really happy with. I thought Kikuchi was the guy coming in that needed more than anybody else.
Yep.
To really step up and improve.
And he has.
And then you see what Logan Gilbert's able to get done so far. Anyway.
Yeah, Kikuchi or Marco would be your left tackle. They'd be Duane Brown. One of those two.
Yeah.
Just talking about who they are this year.
Right.
Just what you can count. Just reliable. You know what you're getting. It's going to be consistent. It's going to be good. Those are your two guys. Then you work your way down the line. We don't know what's going to happen at left guard. You got a new guy. You know, you had somebody there last year who was physically compromised and didn't know what you were going to be getting out of that spot. To me, that might be Justice Sheffield or Justin Dunn or whoever you want to throw there. But you work your way down the line. To me, I feel good about Kikuchi. I feel good about Marco when he's healthy. I'm feeling better about Logan. I mean, it's tough to draw a conclusion on him yet, but right. you really like the way he's trending. And I don't love what I've seen out of Justice Sheffield, and Justin Dunn is still a guy that I think is a back of the rotation guy.
Yeah.
So, right.
Yeah, he's Ethan Posick, if you will.
Yeah. Can do it. Have seen him do it. Also yeah. seen him really struggle.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good comparison. All right. Coming up, we'll size up a division rival. Lindsay Theory will join us for the latest on the LA Rams. That's coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.